sports weekend all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Round of 16 action kicks off this Tuesday evening in the UEFA Champions League, Europe's premier club football tournament. There are matches in Italy and in neighboring Switzerland. The Italian club Juventus is at home against Tottenham, whose star striker Harry Kane is leading England's Premier League this season with 23 goals. At a pre-match news conference in Turin, Italy, Kane was asked if he thinks the Spurs of Tottenham can win on the road against 2017 Champions League finalist Juventus.
Yeah, definitely. Not many people expected us to get out of the group stage, and we proved everyone wrong by finishing top. So, yeah, we've got to come here with belief, and that's what we have. But we, of course, we respect Juventus and what they bring to the table. But, yeah, of course, we have to believe we can get through. So it'll be tough, and then, obviously, hopefully we can take them to Wembley and get the job done.
Harry Kane talks about getting the job done at Wembley Stadium in London. The decisive second leg in this Champions League series between Juventus and Tottenham will be played there March 7th. Tottenham goes into this evening's match after a morale-boosting 1-0 win over local rivals Arsenal. The goal came on a Harry Kane header. The Spurs of Tottenham are currently in fifth place in the English Premier League, 20 points behind first place Manchester City. Man City is on the road against the Swiss club Basel this evening. Man City won the Premier League title in 2012 and 2014 and almost certainly will win it again this season. But Man City's recent campaigns in Europe's top club competition have been relatively disappointing. At a pre-match news conference in Basel, Man City's captain, defender Vincent Kompany, commented on the club's recent Champions League performances.
I wouldn't call it inferiority complex, but lack of experience for sure. We seem to, you know, we've been caught out a few times and on occasions that we shouldn't have. I think things have changed now. If there is a year, if there is a time, if there is a moment now where the club is ready to feel at home in the competition, then it's now. And I'm not going to say it's a matter of time because some teams never win it, but if every year we're able to go with the same confidence in this competition, then if not this year, if not the year after that, eventually we'll get there. I'm sure of it.
Vincent Kompany also is sure of the top European clubs Manchester City will have to beat.
We're trying to break into a well-established order. Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid. And any team that's tried this over the last 10 years has failed. So for us now, it's competing with, first of all, Basel, and hopefully getting to the stage where we can measure ourselves to these teams and, you know, feel like we can beat them.
At that same news conference in Basel, Man City's Spanish manager Pep Guardiola talked about the differences between UEFA Champions League competition and the English Premier League.
We're going to try it every single game since we were together 18 months, so we try to impose our game. So the Champions League is a completely different competition than the local league, or Premier League, because the physicality and the quality of the opponents individually and collectively is higher. 180 minutes, so your emotions are involved in this kind of tournament a lot. And hopefully we can control it as good as possible and go through.
That's Pep Guardiola, the manager of Manchester City Football Club. Man City, the runaway leader in the English Premier League this season, is playing Basel this evening in Switzerland in a first leg round of 16 UEFA Champions League match. The second leg will be played March 7th in Manchester, England. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Russian President Vladimir Putin met FIFA President Gianni Infantino in Moscow Monday to discuss preparations for the 2018 World Cup. Reports say Putin had been scheduled to host Infantino at his residence in Sochi, but the Russian leader stayed in the capital following Sunday's plane crash near Moscow, which killed all 71 people on board. Russian news agencies say Infantino offered his condolences to Putin during their meeting at the Kremlin. Ahead of the meeting, Russian presidential spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, and I quote, "Russia continues preparations for the World Cup. Much of the work has already been done." Peskov added that the Russian leader had, in his words, "a very good and constructive personal relationship with the FIFA president." On a trip to Vietnam in early February, Infantino praised preparations for the World Cup, which is set to take place in Russia from June 14th to July 15th. Infantino said, and I quote, "We'll experience the best World Cup ever this summer in Russia." My VOA colleague Gwen Uten joins us now with a sports social media segment. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. And on World Radio Day, a warm hello to all our Voice of America listeners. As you know, the Olympics are well underway. In fact, an estimated 28.3 million people tuned into the opening ceremony last week. So you know what that means. Lots of tweets. That opening ceremony generated a lot of activity on Twitter. The official Olympics page posted photos from the spectacular opening ceremony performances and awesome fireworks displays. Athletes posted selfies from Olympic Village, lots of happy faces there. One follower tweeted, "This year's torch lighting was worth the wait." But you know the thing people were not happy about, Sonny? Too much talking. One tweeter wrote, "These announcers need to do everybody a favor and stop talking." That sentiment was repeated during the figure skating competition the following day, where followers critiqued a separate set of commentators, saying their constant talking was, quote, "killing the mood." Oh, my. Staying on figure skating, Twitter followers were much more positive and even awestruck by USA figure skater Mirai Nagasu. She has become the first American woman to land a triple axel in the Olympics. Now, this is such a big deal because of the incredible difficulty of the jump. In women's competitions, high-level competitors attempt a double axel, and the triple axel is more common in men's competitions. Well, Mirai Nagasu's triple axel was flawless. I was watching, and tweeters who were also watching reacted in what we call here very colorful language, so I won't repeat that here. But the cleaner versions included tweets like this one. "Mirai Nagasu just became the first American to land a triple axel in Olympic competition, and I am screaming." Former figure skating Olympians Christy Yamaguchi and Scott Hamilton also chimed in on Twitter. Christy said, "Wow, Mirai Nagasu, congratulations. Tears of joy for you again. Hashtag hero." And Scott Hamilton tweets, "So thrilled for Mirai Nagasu becoming the first woman from Team USA to land a triple axel in Olympics competition. Also for her perfect skate on Olympic ice. Great things happen to good people. It was truly a beautiful moment and a beautiful performance, and definitely one for the history books." So here's a segue for you, Sonny. Yesterday, you mentioned tennis great Serena Williams making her return to tennis. Well, Serena gave a shout out to the Olympic women's Nigerian bobsled team on her Facebook page. She included a video of the women training hard in their pursuit for gold and wrote, "This video literally gave me chills. I am so excited to watch Nigeria compete in the Winter Olympics bobsledding race, the first time an African country has ever competed in bobsledding." Serena got a little more personal on social media a couple days ago, sending love to her sister Venus as she competes in the Fed Cup, writing, "11th 1,000 career match wins. Congrats, Venus Williams. That's crazy impressive. Love you." But what is getting the most attention is a video Serena shared on Instagram that shows her husband and their cute-faced daughter, Alexis Olympia, sitting courtside. She is the cutest thing. Serena starting her daughter off early, I'm sure she is one to watch. So that about does it for me today, Sunny. Voice of America listeners, I encourage you to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/Sunny. Sunny posted a photo by Associated Press photographer Chuck Burton. It shows Serena and her older sister Venus, as well as American teammates Lauren Davis and Coco Vandeweghe, and USA coach Lisa Raymond holding the American flag at the net after that Fed Cup victory against the Netherlands. So check that out. Back to you, Sunny.
Thanks, Gwen. As Gwen mentioned, it's World Radio Day. Audrey Azoulay is the Director General of UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. She says World Radio Day 2018 has a sporty theme.
This year, World Radio Day celebrates radio and sports, as radio is a force to share the values at the heart of sport: fair play, teamwork, solidarity, and respect. Radio brings together people in a spirit of friendship and is on the front line in combating unacceptable racist, xenophobic, and intolerant views, whether on the playing field or on airwaves, as well as promoting equality between men and women. This is why UNESCO works tirelessly throughout the world to develop radio as an independent and pluralistic media which promotes cultural and gender diversity in sports broadcasting. Let's work together through radio to harness sport as a force for inclusion, dialogue, development, and peace for all.
Meanwhile, the United Nations Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, has this to say on World Radio Day.
Radio reaches the widest audience in the world. In an era of dramatic advances in communications, radio retains its power to entertain, educate, inform, and inspire. It can unite and empower communities and give voice to the marginalized. This year, with the Winter Olympics now underway, we also recognize the many ways in which sports broadcasting brings people together around excitement and achievement. On World Radio Day, let us celebrate both radio and sports as ways of helping people to achieve their full potential.
That's Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America.
VOA. I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports blog. My latest blog post is titled 50th Anniversary of the Olympics Black Power Salute. During a visit to the Smithsonian's new National Museum of African American History and Culture here in Washington, I saw a statue depicting the powerful actions of American athletes Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City. Each athlete raised a black glove fist during their medal ceremony for the 200 meters running event, in which Smith won the gold medal in a then world record time of 19.83 seconds and Carlos the bronze medal in a time of 20.10 seconds. Australian Peter Norman won the silver medal with a time of 20.06 seconds. Smith and Carlos wore black socks and no shoes on the medals podium, and Smith wore a black scarf around his neck. All three medalists wore human rights badges on their jackets. Speaking at a news conference in Mexico City after the event, Tommy Smith said the black scarf represented black pride, and the black socks with no shoes symbolize black poverty in racist America. In his autobiography, Silent Gesture, Smith said the demonstration was not a black power salute, but a human rights salute. their Olympic protest on October 16, 1968, came about 6 months after civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. John Carlos says he was greatly influenced by King. In a video for Wake Forest University's documentary film program, Carlos talked about meeting Martin Luther King Jr. in New York before the Mexico City Olympics.
I had just left East Texas State University based on social issues and moral issues down in the state of Texas. I had gone back to New York. I had a young wife and a young baby. And I was contemplating, what am I going to do? This particular day, I was at my mom's house, and I was helping my mom to paint the kitchen. And the phone rang. And it was Professor Harry Edwards on the phone. And he stated to me that he was in New York to have a meeting. And the people that was hosting the meeting requested that he invite me to the meeting. I very seldom went downtown to any of the hotels. And I went to the desk and asked them for an organization called SCLC. I had no clue as to what SCLC was. I realized once I got inside that there were a lot of luminaries in that room, people that we had watched on TV that was involved in the civil rights movement. I'm there for about 20 minutes or so. And then the door opens in another room, and out walks Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, I was fit to be tied, man. My lip dropped dead off into my lap. And the emphasis of the meeting was to establish his relationship or his marriage with the potential Olympic boycott. He wanted to make it very clear that he supported the Olympic boycott. When he asked, did I have any questions? Yes, I had two questions. And the first question was, Dr. King, had you ever played any sports? And he smiled, he laughed. He said, that's a good question. He said, but I can't shoot pool. And then I asked him, I said, well, why would you get involved in the Olympic movement? And he told me, he said, John, just imagine you getting in a big rowboat and you're in the midst of a large lake and you row out to the center of the lake and you pull the oars in and sit there and you pick up a rock. He said that rock was the Olympic boycott. He said when it hit the water, anything and everything in that lake knew something was amiss. He said anything on the shores of that lake knew something was amiss. And the second question to him was, Dr. King, if they threatened your life, why would you go back to Memphis? And he told me, he said, John, that's a better question. He said, John, I have to go back and stand for those that won't stand for themselves. And John, I had to go back and stand for those that can't stand for themselves. Well, my life came full circle just by that statement, because that's what I've been doing all my life with people, but I never had a title or a phrase to put over it. I had horn-rimmed glasses on at that time. That was the glasses of the style at the time. And I remember pulling my glasses down on my nose as I'm doing now, putting my glasses on my nose, because I wanted my eyeballs to see his eyeballs with nothing between the two. And quite naturally, anyone can pretty much figure out what I'm looking for. I'm looking at a man who just told me that they threatened his life. So therefore, I'm looking for fear, shaking, serious concern about his well-being. And when I looked in his eyes, I didn't see any fear or any shaking. I saw the Rock of Gibraltar. I saw nothing but love and compassion in his eyes for humanity. And it gave me the impression that it was beyond his life. He wasn't concerned about his life as much as he was concerned about doing the right thing. I think he conveyed that in his speech that he gave the night before he lost his life. So it all came full circle, and you have to ask yourself, what's most important? Stand with your convictions and have no fear? Because what you stand for is far greater than flesh and blood anyway. It's the spirit that you prevailing on society that will live long after your flesh and blood is gone from this planet.
John Carlos, he says he saw love and compassion when he looked in the eyes of Martin Luther King Jr. Carlos says he also saw love in the eyes of Australian silver medalist Peter Norman before the medal ceremony in Mexico City. Carlos says he expected to see fear in Norman's eyes, but Norman told him he believed in human rights and he believed in God. During Norman's funeral in 2006, the two front pallbearers helping carry his coffin were Tommy Smith and John Carlos. And they're the subject of my latest blog post, 50th Anniversary of the Olympics Black Power Salute. More Olympic news. Chloe Kim was one of the big stars Tuesday at the Winter Games in South Korea. The 17-year-old American won the gold medal in the half-pipe women's snowboarding event in Pyeongchang. Kim put up a score of 93.75 on the first of her three runs in the final, and then finished with a near-perfect 98.75 in her third run. She becomes the youngest woman to win an Olympic snowboarding gold medal. Chloe was born in Long Beach, California, but her parents are from South Korea. At a news conference in Pyeongchang Tuesday, Chloe said she's happy to represent two countries.
I definitely, when I was younger, I struggled a little bit, just trying to understand my identity and who I wanted to be. And I think, you know, having my family be there through the whole process was so helpful. And I've surrounded myself with such amazing people that they definitely made it much easier for me. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I got to represent both the U.S. and Korea today, and I'm very honored to have been able to do that.
Olympic champion Chloe Kim was joined on the medals podium by China's Liu Xiao, who won the silver, and American Ariel Gold, who won the bronze. Chloe says she's delighted Ariel also won a medal.
I mean, I'm so hyped to be here and to land the runs I did today. It's just been such an amazing honor, and being on the podium with one of my good friends is always a plus, and I'm so happy we get to go through this together.
Finally, Olympic champion Chloe Kim of the USA talked about the development of women's snowboarding.
Obviously, taking the win was just icing on the cake, but it was very, very exciting to watch the contest today. You know, women's snowboarding has progressed. It's such a fast pace that it's just such an honor to be a part of that. And, you know, I feel like there's going to be some cool tricks in the next Olympics, so it's exciting to think about.
Olympic champion Chloe Kim of the United States speaking in Pyeongchang, South Korea. For our VOA listeners who are thinking about the Olympic half-pipe snowboarding event and wondering, what exactly is it, Sonny? Well, the name of the competition comes from the surface the athletes compete on. When you look at it, it looks like half a pipe. And it's also used in skateboarding and other daredevil-type extreme sports. Separately, norovirus has been an issue at this year's Winter Games, although no athletes are known to have been infected. South Korean health authorities on Tuesday said the outbreak that has sickened staff and volunteers was likely caused by contaminated water used to prepare food. Nearly 200 cases have been confirmed since February 1st. The Atlanta-based Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the norovirus is very contagious and can be transmitted from an infected person, contaminated food or water, or by touching contaminated surfaces. The CDC says the virus can lead to stomach pain, nausea, diarrhea, and vomiting. And we hope it does not spread among all those athletes in South Korea. And that wraps up the February 13th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early February, the United States imposed restrictions on the export of defense articles and defense services into South Sudan. The United States does not directly sell arms to South Sudan, but the ban will prevent any U.S. company or citizen from providing military equipment or defense services to the warring factions. Exports of weapons and ammunition into South Sudan undercut efforts to protect civilians, and prohibiting the sale or transfer of arms pressures the government of South Sudan and the armed opposition to implement the December 21st cessation of hostilities and start to end the trauma and displacement that millions of innocent South Sudanese have suffered. South Sudan gained its independence from Sudan in 2011. Peace lasted less than 18 months. In December 2013, a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar erupted into civil war. The warring parties agreed to a peace accord in 2015 and to ceasefires on a number of occasions. All were broken before the ink was dry on the agreement. The continued fighting has cost the lives of thousands of people and led to a cutback in oil production, a devastated economy, human rights abuses, hunger, and malnutrition. The United States is appalled by the continuing violence in South Sudan that has created one of Africa's worst humanitarian crises, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. 1.5 million people are now on the brink of famine, despite enormous efforts by the United States and other donors since the conflict began in 2013 to stave off famine and save lives, she said. We urge all countries, including South Sudan's neighbors, to promote peace and save innocent lives by cutting off the flow of defense articles and defense services to South Sudan and to halt support to actors who are working to destabilize the country. We encourage the Intergovernmental Authority on Development and the African Union to consider sanctions measures against those who undermine the peace process. Additionally, the United States is seeking support for a UN Security Council embargo on all arms flows into South Sudan, and we urge all UN Security Council members to join us in supporting this action. The message must be clear. The United States, the region, and the international community will not stand idly by as innocent South Sudanese civilians are murdered.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll speak with Bobby Wine, the outspoken Ugandan member of parliament, is a businessman, activist, humanitarian, and musician. His lyrics often advocate for Uganda's struggling and poor. Bobby Wine joins host Shaka Sali to discuss his role as an artist in African politics.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Lina Ormudu, host of Health Chat. Tune in next week on Health Chat for an exclusive interview with Professor Isaac Folorunso, Minister of Health of the Republic of Nigeria, and Dr. Patrick Abuache, Director of the Family Health Division for the Ghana Health Service. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.